Ever been woken up panicking? Ever been calling out in your dream? Ever been worried by what you've dreamt? Sylv tells me that this week I was shouting out in my dream. I don't know what the dream was about, but I was shouting out. She has to put up with that occasionally. Sometimes I can recount the most amazing, stupid dreams. We have a nine-month-old little granddaughter, and this week I dreamt that I'd gone with somebody else to the swimming pool. I had got her in a baby carry. I'd put her on a hook in the changing room, and I'd forgotten my towel, so I had to go back to get my towel. Then I thought, oh no, I can't leave a nine-month-old hanging on a hook in the changing room. So I picked her off and took her with me to get my towel from the car. Then I discovered I hadn't got the car key. And my granddaughter, who's only 9 months old, started speaking to me in sentences. So I get my phone out of my pocket and I start doing this video recording of my granddaughter, who's, what a load of nonsense, isn't it? But that was my dream this week. Well, one of them anyway. I won't tell you any more because that one. Anyway, the king, Nebuchadnezzar, the world's greatest and toughest leader, was torn apart by his dream. Sorry, I should be asking you to put some slides up, shouldn't I? So we've had number one, which was dreaming. Oh, look at that. Isn't that great? So we'll move on to number two now. Now, if you've ever been to the British Museum, you may have seen something like this. There's loads of things in the British Museum, which are absolutely fantastic to see about Nebuchadnezzar or the Assyrian Empire. And they are huge, some of them, absolutely massive. And when you think that these were done sort of like 600 years before Christ, this is quite amazing, all of these etchings. And if you can't make it out, this is Nebuchadnezzar. The world had never seen such a powerful man. He conquered nation after nation. He was ruthless. His soldiers were brutal. No one escaped, especially if they tried to trick him. Fear was a great tactic. And he had the most horrific ways of dealing with people. He was powerful and he was wealthy. But he couldn't control everything because he wasn't God. Let's have the next one. The Bible tells us again and again that the God of heaven and earth is in charge of everything. Whether we like that idea or not, God is boss. Now, like Nebuchadnezzar, we want to be in charge of our lives. We want to choose what we do, where we go, who we go out with, how we spend our money. God has the best plans for us. And we need to listen to him. And this was what Nebuchadnezzar was about to find out. Next one. Nebuchadnezzar was fearful about his dream. He knew it meant something really important, but he was ripped apart because he couldn't remember what he dreamt. Next one. Daniel's life had been ripped apart. War had ripped apart everything, his country, his home, his family. Who'd done it? Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel had been one of the lucky ones, taken to Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar's country, Nebuchadnezzar's city. Now with three other guys, he was in Nebuchadnezzar's college, and he wasn't even 17. He didn't speak the language. He didn't know anyone except the three other guys who'd experienced the same trauma. And everything around him was different. Everything was huge. Buildings, roads, temples. And everybody did things differently. Now, can you imagine what that was like? You may have experienced huge family turmoil. It's been really hard, perhaps, as mum or dad are no longer around. Maybe you had to move homes. Maybe you had to move schools. Maybe you had to move countries. Maybe you've had to learn a new language. It's been really tough. Maybe it's been traumatic for you. What made it worse for Daniel was people in his home country said God would stop it happening. But God hadn't. So was God real? Was God here with him in this new place? Or was the idea of God a whole load of nonsense? Incredibly, Daniel didn't think so. He knew God was real and that God was with him, even in the horror of what he'd experienced. Now, given that he was only 14 or 15 when all this happened, it's incredible to think that he knew God was with him, even in all the pain that he'd experienced and felt. Daniel trusted in God. Now he was in Nebuchadnezzar's college because he was handsome. He was quick thinking. He was polite. He was hard working. And that's where God wanted him to be. Okay, so maybe you don't reckon yourself to be handsome or beautiful. Maybe you don't think you're clever either. But you can still be where God wants you to be. And he can still use you there. Next one. So as soon as Daniel and his friends arrived in Nebuchadnezzar's college, he faced real challenges. The language was different, the customs were different, the religion was different, the food was different, pork was on the menu, and as a Jew, he wasn't allowed to eat it. Daniel had choices to make. Not at home in Israel, he could become part of the crowd. He could just merge into what everybody else was doing around him. You know, the sort of Snapchatting, Instagramming, Facebook. No, because none of that. But he could have been involved in some of that sort of stuff, couldn't he? Doing stuff like everybody around him, pretending he was just one of the group. Or he could live differently for God. And that's what Daniel chose. We haven't read chapter 1, but that's what we'd find out. He didn't want to be a nerd, but he did want to honor God who'd saved his life. God was so fantastic, he wanted others to get to know him too. And that would be challenging because the ways of everyone around him were so different. So, this might not be applicable to you, but it might be. What about when you may go off to university or college, or will you be part of the crowd or join in everything around you regardless? Or will you choose to honor God? He's the ones enable you to get you where you are and has always provided for you. What about when you start a new job? Will you choose to honor God, even though it'll be challenging? What have you chosen? Are you part of the crowd? Do you try to live differently because you love God? You want to follow him and you want others to get to know him too. Daniel was God's man. He chose to live differently. Even though he'd been given a different name to reflect the gods of Babylon, God was with him. Instead of eating the rich food of the royal palace, Daniel negotiated a plain diet. And it paid off. He and his friends were more healthy. Let that be an encouragement if you've chosen a plain diet. No, he worked hard. Exams came at the end of the college course. Daniel and his three friends beat everyone else. Let me read just a couple of verses there. When the training period ordered by the king was completed, the chief of staff brought all the young men to King Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and no one impressed him as much as Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the royal service. And whenever the king consulted them in any matter requiring wisdom and balanced judgment, he found them 10 times more capable than any of the magicians and enchanters in his entire kingdom. Wow, how incredible is that? So, exams over. But before the course ended, that was the end of the course, but before that happened, Nebuchadnezzar had this dream that we read about earlier on. How amazing that Nebuchadnezzar should call in all the people that normally gave him understanding, the magicians, the enchanters, the astrologers, the sorcerers. Now, let me just put in an aside here. We're not just talking about anybody and everybody. These were the professionals. They were the scientists. They were the astronomers. They might have been called magicians, but they weren't the sort of magicians that we tend to think about doing tricks. These guys were the real top notch of society, the intellectual elite. These guys were the ones that actually had an incredible amount of power, and they'd been behind the success of Nebuchadnezzar. They told him when it was okay to conquer another country. They told him that Daniel's country would be beaten. These guys would certainly solve Nebuchadnezzar's problem. But a major dream he couldn't remember? You remember when Jesus was born, there were wise men, magi, that came from the east? Those wise men, those magi, were linked to this group of people that were the elite in Babylon. And Daniel was part of that group, or was about to become part of that group. It's quite incredible to think about that way back. And the thinking is that these have got Zoroastrian connections. And the way in which they work things out wasn't just, you know, sort of nonsense. They did actually look up at the alignment. And it wasn't like astrology as we would think of it today. There was a huge scientific background to it. And Daniel was part of that group. So, back to Nebuchadnezzar. Why did he demand the impossible? If these professional wise men couldn't come up with what the dream was, the chances were they could be plotting to overthrow Nebuchadnezzar. So little wonder then that Nebuchadnezzar flew into such a rage. He was scared that they, his wise men, were out to get him. So he decided to kill them before they could finish him off. And Daniel and his friends, if you look at the number of years, it was in the first year that King Nebuchadnezzar took over Jerusalem. And then this was in the second year that this happened. And Daniel's training was 3 years. So it was before Daniel probably finished his course. Okay. Their course wasn't yet finished. Now they were going to die. So what happens here in verses 14 and 15? When the Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, came to kill them, and that's why they probably weren't already with the king, because they hadn't finished their course. Daniel handled the situation with wisdom and discretion. He asked Arioch, "Why has the king issued such a harsh decree?" So Arioch told him all that had happened. Daniel went at once to see the king and requested more time to tell the king what the dream meant. Can you imagine it? Nebuchadnezzar was furious, violently angry, and somehow, with tact and diplomacy, Daniel negotiated what the full-time professionals couldn't. God was with him. God was clearly involved, the timing, Daniel's location. He could have been there, part of the original group, but he wasn't. And how he responded, they were all hallmarks of God at work. Now, we should be on number 9. Sorry, I've skipped a few, I expect. Daniel and his friends prayed. 19a. That night, the secret was revealed to Daniel in a vision. They prayed and it was revealed. And how does Daniel respond? As it was revealed, Daniel praised the God of heaven. He said, "Praise the name of God forever and ever, for he has all wisdom and power. He controls the course of world events. He removes kings and sets up other kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the scholars. He reveals deep and mysterious things and knows what lies hidden in the darkness, though he is surrounded by light." And then what does he say? "I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors, for you've given me wisdom and strength. You have told me what we asked of you and revealed to us what the king demanded. Daniel knew God, and he wants us to know God too, so that's what he tells us God is like. Daniel wrote this out. He says he's the one, God is in the one, who's in charge of everything. Now, I thank you. So he personally thanks God. So, what happens? Daniel went in to see Arioch, whom the king had ordered to execute the wise men of Babylon. Daniel said to him, "Don't kill the wise men. Take me to the king." Take me to the king, and I will tell him the meaning of his dream. Arioch quickly took Daniel to the king and said, "I found the one of the captives from Judah who will tell the king the meaning of his dream." The king said to Daniel, also known as Belteshazzar, "Is this true? Can you tell me what my dream was and what it means?" Daniel replied, "There are no wise men, enchanters, magicians, or fortune tellers who can reveal the king's secret. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in the future. Now I will tell you your dream and the visions you saw as you lay on your bed." Number 10, I think we should be at. So here's Daniel, the young foreigner in training from a defeated nation, telling the most powerful man on earth that his God created the situation. And he's created the situation because he wants to make himself known. It's easy to blame God, isn't it, for things that happen in our lives. God has given us everything. Life itself, health, food, shelter, security. And when something goes in a direction that we don't want or expect, well, shouldn't we ask God what he wants us to learn from it? God wants us to appreciate his awesome glory, how great he is and how much he cares for us. Sometimes our natural reaction is to blame God and to think he doesn't really care about us. But the truth is, he doesn't want to wreck our lives. He wants the best for us. And we only get to know what that is when we get to know him better. So let's have the next slide. Verses 31 to 35 now I'm at. "In your vision, your majesty, you saw standing before you a huge, shining statue of a man. It was a frightening sight. The head of the statue was made of fine gold. Its chest and arms were silver. Its belly and thighs were bronze. Its legs were iron. Its feet were a combination of iron and baked clay. As you watched, a rock was cut from a mountain, but not by human hands. It struck the feet of iron and clay, smashed them to bits. The whole statue was crushed into small pieces of iron, clay, bronze, silver, and gold. Then the wind blew them away without a trace, like chaff on a threshing floor. But the rock that knocked the statue down became a great mountain that covered the whole earth." A simple yet an amazing dream. The awesomeness of the statue. There he is. I mean, you can imagine the size of it. The wonder. The size of its appearance, it was out of this world. Enough of the dream. What did it mean? The meaning was vital for Nebuchadnezzar's national interests, his national security. Let's see what Daniel goes on to tell us. Verse 36. "That was the dream. Now we will tell the king what it means. Your majesty, you are the greatest of kings." Well, that was a good place to start, wasn't it? "You are the greatest of kings. The God of heaven has given you sovereignty, power, strength, and honor. He has made you ruler over all the inhabited world and has put even the wild animals and birds under your control. You are that head of gold. But after your kingdom comes to an end, another kingdom inferior to yours will rise to take your place. After that kingdom has fallen, yet a third kingdom, represented by bronze, will rise to rule the world. Following that kingdom, there will be a fourth one, as strong as iron. That kingdom will smash and crush all previous empires, just as iron smashes and crushes everything it strikes. The feet and toes you saw were a combination of iron and baked clay, showing that this kingdom will be a divided kingdom. Like iron mixed with clay, it will have some of the strength of iron, but while some of it will be as strong as iron, other parts will be as weak as clay. This mixture of iron and clay also shows that these kingdoms will try to strengthen themselves by forming alliances with each other through intermarriage, but they will not hold together, just as iron and clay do not mix. During the reigns of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed or conquered. It will crush all these kingdoms into nothingness, and it will stand forever. That is the meaning of the rock cut from the mountain, though not by human hands, that crushed to pieces the statue of iron, bronze, clay, silver, and gold. The great God was showing the king what will happen in the future. The dream is true and its meaning is certain. Incredibly, God was showing Nebuchadnezzar his future and the future way beyond him. God has a plan for the world. Nebuchadnezzar was in the plan. He had a significant place, a great place, but it wasn't the most important place. Verse 44 showed us the most important one. The God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed or conquered. An unlikely start. Not a diamond, but just a plain stone developing into a kingdom that will fill the earth and never be destroyed. Next slide. This is God's kingdom. It began with Jesus coming to earth, a humble beginning of an unlikely man. But through his death and resurrection, millions have been rescued by God. They've come to know God, to follow him and to live for him. God's kingdom is the greatest this world has ever known. It's in every continent. It has with more members. It's across more countries than any other kingdom. It's not power driven. It's not politically driven. It's not economically driven. It's not humanly driven. God is building his kingdom. Jesus said in Matthew 16:18, I will build my church and nothing will overcome it. Back to Nebuchadnezzar 46 and 47. Next slide. What? What's going on here? Then King Nebuchadnezzar threw himself down before Daniel and worshipped him. And he commanded his people to offer sacrifices and burn sweet incense before him. The king said to Daniel, truly, your God is the greatest of gods, the Lord over kings, a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this secret. The most powerful man in the richest kingdom on his knees in front of this young foreigner who hasn't even finished his training. It's unbelievable, isn't it? And yet God has done it. Daniel had been faithful. He knew God. He trusted God through horrendous personal circumstances. He'd honored God in his new setting. And God had used his faithfulness to make himself known to the most powerful king ever. Because Daniel honored God, God blessed Nebuchadnezzar. And if you read on in Daniel, you'll see Nebuchadnezzar still had an awful lot to learn. God calls us to follow him. He calls us to be faithful. He calls us to honor him even when it's tough. Why? Because he wants to bless us And he wants to bless others around us. Next slide. The UK is much like Babylon. Sorry, this should have all been in one line. Where would you say things are in the UK on this scale? Just think about Christianity for a moment. Years ago, it would have been at that end, wouldn't it? People embraced Christianity. It was great. People would follow things that are Christian. But would you say it slipped back this way? Maybe it became, well, we don't want to embrace it wholeheartedly, but we'll respect it. We'll respect Christians. And then maybe we'll tolerate Christians. Yeah, we'll put up with them if we have to. No. We'll make fun of Christians. Yeah, they're stupid, aren't they? Believing all that nonsense that they do, the mumbo jumble of the Bible. Then it's opposing, isn't it? And we can see in our society today there's been quite a shift, even in the last 50 years, from one end of that to the other end of that spectrum. Wow, how amazing in 50 years. The Babylon of Daniel's day was a type of all kingdoms that do not acknowledge God, or they think they can dispense with him. And this is a description of most of the world of our time, isn't it? Daniel and his three friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, was under tremendous pressure to conform. His religion wasn't tolerated. It wasn't respected. Well, maybe, as long as he didn't allow it to intrude into public life or rock the ship of the government. And that's our situation, isn't it, too? We can practice our religion so long as it's private, so long as it's not in the workplace, not in the school, not in any public place. I can remember just a number of years ago now, I think it was, I can't remember the guy's name, telling Tony Blair, we don't do God. Do you remember that a while ago? The world seemed to be winning. Nebuchadnezzar and after him Belshazzar reigned. Nebuchadnezzar believed himself to be above having to answer to anyone. Nevertheless, in spite of these things, God told Daniel, he is God, in control of history, and his purposes are being accomplished even in the overthrow and captivity of his people. Moreover, in the end, God will establish a kingdom that will endure forever. The destiny of all God's people is wrapped up in that eternal kingdom. So the last slide. God sent his son into the world to show who he was, what he's like. Not to judge the world, not to say, wrong, 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 wrong. Well, he does in one sense, because he wants us to see that he's got things better. So it's not to judge. He wants to rescue. For this is how God loved the world. He gave his one and only Son so that everyone who believes in him will not perish but have eternal life. And that's what God wants us to communicate as we live for him day by day. Because he wants to bless us and bless others through us.